We're thankful for the Lord's blessings on the service thus far, and thankful for the public prayers been offered, and ask that I continue to be with us through the service today. I'd like to take for a subject this morning the reign of sin and the reign of grace. And I want to find these two terms in the book of Romans, and those two terms are actually in Romans chapter 5. Now, really the main thought that I want to try to bring out of this is found down in chapter 6. And we'll get to that here in just a little bit, but there's a few things I want to look at here in Romans chapter 5 to kind of help us understand the impact of what the Apostle Paul is trying to teach in this letter. And perhaps most all of us are very familiar with Romans chapter 5 and verse 12. Wherefore, as by one man sin, death entered into the world, and death by sin, so that death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. And if you've ever been around a Primitive Baptist very long and heard the preaching and the teaching on total depravity, you probably heard this verse quoted. Because if you're teaching on total depravity, this is a great verse to teach. Teaching how that, and throughout this fifth chapter of Romans, Paul is showing the great correlation and the effect that Adam's sin had on you and I. And Adam's sin did cause us to be sinners by nature. You and I are sinners by practice. And we're sinners by practice because we are born sinners by nature. That is our nature to sin. And I would ask all of you parents here this morning, did you have to teach your children to lie? Did you have to teach them to tell the truth? Lying comes natural, doesn't it? You know, doing all kinds of bad things comes natural. Why is that? Because that's our fallen nature that we've all inherited from Adam. But even beyond that, what it's teaching here in Romans chapter 5 is the fact that not only did Adam's sin affect us because of that nature, but Adam's sin affected us because he was our representative. When Adam sinned, he was representing all of his family that would come from him and Eve, which means all of mankind. He was our representative. So when Adam sinned, he fell. Oh, and by the way, just for fun, I just want to throw this in. I read the other day that made the statement when Adam and Eve sinned, were deceived, and caused the whole fall upon mankind. That's not a true statement. They both sinned. But the scriptures are very plain that Eve was deceived. Adam knew what he was doing when he partook of that fruit. She was deceived and he was not. We fell in him. It wasn't the fall in Eve. We fell in Adam. Why? He was our representative. We didn't fall when Eve took that first bite of that forbidden fruit. So now we're all fallen in sin. And I think every one of us here understands that principle, that we're all sinners. We all fall short of the glory of God. Because we are sinners, we do not in any way in our own works and in our own nature and our own selves deserve heaven and immortal glory. I think we all realize that we're, if it were not for Jesus Christ coming to this earth and dying on the cross for us, there would be no hope for any of us, would there? I think we all understand that. But what I want us to understand this morning, if you go further down, here in Romans chapter 5, and I want to read some verses to you. I want to begin reading just portions of verses, starting with verse 15. And what I want you to pay attention to as we look at these verses and just the pieces that I'm bringing to you, that I want you to see a parallel. And what Paul is doing, he said, okay, this happened in Adam. Then this happened in Christ. Notice this, as we look at these verses, and Paul repeats it quite frequently here in this passage. So if you look at Romans chapter 5 and verse 15, but he says, but not as the offense, so is also the free gift. For if through the offense of one many be dead, much more the grace of God, the gift of grace, which is by one man, Jesus Christ, had abounded to many. So did you see that here's something that happened that Adam brought, by one man Adam? Disobedience, the offense. And because of that, we're dead. But then Jesus Christ did something else. Is that clear? I mean, you see what each one of them did. Don't you hear something that happened? Then notice verse 16. It says, not as it was by one that sinned. There's Adam again. And so is the gift. There's Christ. Continue on in verse 16. It says, for the judgment was by one to condemnation. That's what happened when Adam fell and sinned. We all ended up in condemnation. That means, as sinners, we don't deserve heaven. And we're going to some place less desirable unless there's an interceder for us. Then he says, but the free gift is of many offenses unto justification. There's the work of Christ. Isn't that easy when you notice that here's how easy Paul is laying this out? Here's the work and the effect of what Adam did, and here's the effect of Christ. Verse 17, for if by one man's offense death reigned by one. Here's Adam's working. Now, you remember I said at the beginning that we wanted to bring out to you this morning the reign of sin and the reign of grace. So here we have the reign of sin. You said, wait a minute. It said the reign of death. Well, that's the reign of sin. What is the wages of sin? That's an easy question for us to answer, isn't it? You know, when sin is completed, what does it bring forth? Death. And then he said, much more they which receive abundance of grace and the gift of righteousness shall reign in life by one, Jesus Christ. Now here it says the reign of life. You said, wait a minute, you said a while ago the reign of grace. What does grace bring? Life. Sin brings death. Grace brings life. All right? Verse 18, therefore, as by the offense one judgment came upon all men, even so the righteous of one, the free gift came upon all men unto justification of life. Verse 19, for as by one man's disobedience many were made sinners, so by the offense, by the obedience of one shall many be made righteous. Again, can you see Adam's work? And Christ's work. Adam is our representative. Christ is our representative. Adam represents his family. Christ represents his family. There's a great overlap, but it's not exactly the same family. Now, isn't it interesting that Paul kept pounding and pounding and pounding on that same point? I mean, he stated a little bit different, but wasn't he basically saying the same thing in every one of those verses? That we became sinners in Adam, and we became righteous in Christ. Now, let me say something that maybe will help us understand something else here in just a few minutes. That sin that Adam committed that plunged us into sin, that we became sinners by something that Adam did, was that something that took Adam 10 years to accomplish? Or did it happen just in a moment? It was in that moment that he partook of that forbidden fruit, wasn't it? And the work that Jesus Christ did to bring us life Did it take Jesus Christ, 33 and a half years to do it? Or 10 years? Or was it in a little bit shorter time period? It was at the time that he died upon the cross for us and gave his life for us. So what we're looking at is something that happened in a moment that plunged us into sin. And we're looking at something that happened at one point in history that enables us to have everlasting life. And so now we get down to verse 20. And after Paul has established all of this point about Adam did something and caused sin, and Christ is doing something to get us out of sin. And then Paul says, moreover, the law entered that the offense might abound. I've heard a lot of things in my life. I've heard a lot of things that I would consider garbage. You know, one of the things I've heard that I would consider garbage? I've heard some people say, and I've read after them, that said, you know, God brought in the law of Moses, and man sinned, it didn't work out, so God had to go to a different plan. And isn't that garbage? Like, God tried something, well, that didn't work, let me try something else. If that doesn't work, I guess I'll have to try. No, that's not the way our God works. Here it tells us the reason that God established and sent the law. He said the law entered that the offense might abound. You know what Paul is saying? The Lord had a real good reason for bringing the law into this world. He had a real good reason for giving the law to Moses. You know, the law never could save anybody. The law was not designed to save anybody. If there would have been anybody in the day of Moses that had the ability to keep most all of the law, there were still some points in the law that they would offend. The law was designed to show man that the law can't save them. The law was designed, as it says here, to show you the exceeding sinfulness of sin. The law came in to show us that we needed a Savior. And if there's anybody in this room that went through an experience of grace like I did, you know, I can remember as a young teenager and beginning to get interested in the things of the Lord, that I thought, well, if I can just read the Bible and then do everything in the Bible, I will be okay. You know what I found out? I can't do that. You know, sometimes it seems like the harder we try to be righteous, the harder it gets and the worse we get. That's the way it is. The law shows us that we're sinners. And you know, I've heard old preachers, unfortunately, it won't be long and people are going to start calling me an old preacher. You know, I'm not happy about that, but that's just the way things are. Won't be long, people are going to be calling me that. But I used to remember hearing old preachers. You know, I used to hear these preachers, you know, and I hate to say names, but I mean ages, but I will. But, you know, say a preacher that's 80 to 90 years old, you know, somewhere in that range. You know, we still got a lot of those preachers that are very, very beneficial to us in that age range. Say, you know, the older I get, I find out the more I sin. And you know, as a younger man, I used to look at that and say, I don't believe that. I mean, this guy's about to fall over dead. I mean, he's old. And what's he talking about? He's a bigger sinner now than he ever was before. Well, you know, as I got older, I began to realize something. And I don't think what those old preachers weren't just talking about the things that we may go out and do. What they're talking about is the fact that they realize the exceeding sinfulness of even our thoughts. Now, y'all probably don't realize this, and I mean, and I've stated this a number of places. I'm sure I've said it here before, but you know, all you people that think I'm just such a wonderful person, y'all probably don't realize how many times I just wanted to whop somebody upside the head with a two before. You know, we have those thoughts from time to time, don't we? You know what that is? And what that does, that shows me that I cannot keep to the law. Even if I could restrain my actions, my mind is still evil. The law tells me that. It shows me that. I have aught against my brother. Sometimes I'm covetous. Sometimes I have evil thoughts. The law came that these offenses might abound. I see myself as a sinner. And then he says here in verse 20, here's a verse. And I guess my favorite person I've ever heard quote this verse was Brother Afton Richards. I remember in college going to church over on 44th, hearing Brother Afton's pastor there quoting this verse time and time again. But where sin abounded, grace did much more abound. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that a wonderful statement to think? And when you stop and look at what you are in Adam, a sinner, and when you stop to think not only your actions, but your words and your thoughts will condemn you in the sight of God. And you say, well, wait a minute, I've got all these horrible thoughts. I've had a 10 bad thoughts about the preacher in the last 10 minutes. You have all those kind of thoughts and say, I'm a horrible sinner. Aren't you comforted when you get to this verse and read where it says, where sin did abound, grace just barely covered it up? Well, that would be all right if grace just barely covered it up. We'd still be safe, wouldn't we? But he didn't say just barely managed to get it covered up. He said grace abounded. I take great comfort in that. No matter how much I've ever sinned or will ever sin, God has plenty of grace to cover all of my sins. And then he says in verse 21, he said, that as sin hath reigned unto death, even so might grace reign through righteousness. Now that's where I got my title for my remarks this morning. Here you have the reign of sin and the reign of grace. And Paul's going to talk about that now a little bit in the sixth chapter. Because there's a certain response that is very common. Whenever we start talking about where sin has abounded and grace has much more abounded, you're going to have some people that object to it. And I've had this happen to me, and I've read about a whole bunch of other people. I've heard a lot of people talk about it. But when you go out and you start talking to people and tell them about the doctrines of grace, that we are chosen in Christ and we serve Christ because he has chosen us, and that we don't have anything at all to do with our eternal salvation, nothing at all. No decision, no baptism, no amount of good works. There's nothing that we do to get us into heaven. It's all by the work of Jesus Christ. It's all by Christ. It's all by grace. Nothing by our own selves. So no matter how much we sin, Jesus Christ has paid for those sins and we're heaven bound. You know what the common response is? Well, if I believe that, I'd go out and sin all I wanted to. You ever had anybody respond to you in that way? You ever heard that? And I have. I believe in chapter 6, Paul is responding to that accusation. In fact, I have read one commentator on the book of Romans. I've read several commentaries on the book of Romans. I still don't understand it, but I'm working on it. One commentary I read, a preacher said, if you preach the doctrines of grace correctly, you're going to be charged with being an antimonian. Y'all know what an antimonian is? An antimonian, that is a doctrine that teaches that it doesn't matter what you do in this life. In other words, you can go out and sin all you want to, and it doesn't make any difference to your eternal salvation. If we're preaching grace as strong as we ought to, we're going to be charged with that. And I would agree to that. If we're preaching about how great and wondrous grace is, We will hear that charge from time to time. I wish people understood how wonderful grace is. You know, I've talked to people. I'm telling them about grace, and they said, but you don't know what I've done. You know why I respond? You think that anything you have done surprised God? There's nothing that we have ever thought, said, or done that surprised God. He knew all about us before we were ever born. He knew everything that we would ever think or say or do before we were ever born. And you know what? He still loves us. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that a wondrous? Think about how wondrous God's love is and how great it is. So Paul, I believe, is trying to respond to that charge in chapter 6. And he says, what shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Now here's some perverted logic, if you want some perverted logic. People would read this, say, well, where sin abounds, grace did much more abound. You know, you have one time sin and you have 1.5 times grace. So if you want more grace, just sin more. And that's kind of stupid, isn't it? That doesn't even make good nonsense, but people have said that. That's what Paul was responding to here. You know, shall we continue in sin that grace may more abound? And I'm glad that the Apostle Paul did not beat around the bush. When he came to the point of answering that question, you know, shall we continue in sin? He made it very clear what he thought about that idea. First two words of verse 2, God forbid. And I am told by those people who are a lot smarter than I am that understand the Greek language that this is a very, very strong, the way it's phrased in the Greek is very strong, very emphatic. Paul was wanting to emphasize the point that no, we are not to continue in sin. And then he says, after God forbid, he says, how shall we that are dead to sin live any longer therein? This particular verse is what's held my mind the last few days. What is Paul trying to tell us? There are some people, in fact, I've probably said this myself a lot. There are some people who have taught this and says, well, since you and I are God's children and God has regenerated us and we've been born again and God has given us a hearing ear and an understanding heart so that we now understand the doctrines of grace. And since now we understand what Jesus Christ has done for us, since we have that understanding now, well, it doesn't make sense for us to keep on sinning. We need to sanctify ourselves. We need to purify ourselves as much as we can and try to live the best life that we can. Now, that's all true, isn't it? Shouldn't we try to be purifying our lives? Shouldn't we be striving hard to eliminate sin in our lives and serving God better? Certainly. But I just don't think that's what this verse is teaching. A few minutes ago, we made the point that what Adam did was at one point in time, wasn't it? And what Christ did was at one point in time. I think what Paul still has under consideration is something that happened at one point in time. When people talk about sanctification, setting yourself apart for a holy use, you know when that point starts? I can look in my experience. When did I begin to come to start that process of sanctifying myself and trying to live right as God would have me to live? You know when I started that? At the new birth, at the point of regeneration, when I finally had spiritual understanding. That's when I started. You know when I'm going to finish? Well, there's two possibilities when I'm going to finish. Here in a minute, I'll tell you which one I like the best. But there's two possibilities when I'm going to complete my sanctification. I'm working all the time. I hope I'm going the right direction. Every once in a while, you know, we kind of backslide. But we're all getting more sanctified all the time, trying to do better and better and better. That process in my life will be complete when I die. I'm going to be in that process, trying to get better and better all my life. There is another possibility. The other possibility is my process of sanctification in my life is going to be complete when the Lord returns. Now, I really would like for the Lord to return before I die. You know, that's just kind of selfish, isn't it? But, you know, by the way, the church, the Lord's church, has always believed for the last 2,000 years, the church has always believed in the imminent return of Jesus Christ. That's one of the marks of the Lord's church. But we believe in the imminent return. What that means is that we believe that Christ can come back at any moment. And let me tell you, brothers and sisters, I'm ready. At any moment, I'm ready. Now, Paul here is teaching something, I believe, different than that process of sanctification. That's true, but I think the context will teach us. He's talking about something happening in one point. And he says here, how shall we? You look at that word, we. I think that helps us understand a little bit what Paul is talking about. Who is the we that he's talking about? If this verse was teaching this progressive sanctification that we're just slowly getting better and better and better and better all the time, getting closer and closer to God all the time in our personal religious walk, he would have to separate and make a point which ones had got far enough to be included in that group. But he says we. So that's telling me that Paul has a specific group of people in mind. Who is it? Those that are born again. The regenerate. I believe that's the ones that he's talking about. That's the we that he's talking about. Now let me give you one answer that I've heard to that question that we get all the time. If I believe that, I would sin all I wanted. Well, I sin more than I want. Sometimes people say, if I believed that, I'd do whatever I want. Have y'all ever heard that? If I believed like y'all do, I'd go out and do whatever I want. You know what my response would be? I am doing what I want. I wanted to be in church this morning. I want to get up and read my Bible this morning. I want to serve God this morning. That's what I want to do. That's what I'm doing. I am doing what I want. Isn't that great? That God's children can do what we want and it's the right thing? Now, why is it that I have that want? Because I'm one of God's children, his regenerate children. If I have a desire to do anything good, it's from God. It's not from me. It's that God gave it to me when he gave me the new birth. So if you have spiritual ears to understand, if you have hearing, if your heart can understand these things of God, you're included in this we. If you understand grace, you're part of that we. And it says, how shall we that are dead to sin live any longer therein? Now, if you look at the language used in verse 1 about continuing in sin, and you look here in verse 2 and says, live any longer, what he is teaching is about a habit of sin. You know, you can go back over to 1 John chapter 3, I think, where it says that, verse 9, whosoever is born of God doth not commit sin. Don't you like that verse? He that is born of God does not commit sin. So how many of you here that are born of God, which I assume is almost everybody in the room, maybe everybody, how many of you here do not commit sin anymore? I wish that was true, don't you? That when we're born of God, we're regenerated, that we never would commit another sin. Wouldn't that be great? Not possible, is it? Why is it not possible? Because we still have our sin nature of our flesh with us. At the new birth, God didn't take out the old nature. He just gave us a second nature. So now we have both, and they're fighting a war against each other all the time. You know who wins? The one you feed. Okay? Now, so now we have this new nature. Now, this new nature that does not sin, our spiritual side, our inner man does not sin. The outer man does. There's that battle. There's a constant battle in the child of God. In fact, when I'm talking to somebody, and if they describe to me that inner conflict that they have about their struggle to do right, but evil's present with them all the time, you know what my conclusion is? This is a born-again child of God. You're not going to have that struggle without that. Now, I want to illustrate this in a particular way. There's a couple of ways we can illustrate. One, let me do this a quick and easy way, and then I'll go to another one. But think about the sad time in the history of this nation in the 1800s during the time of slavery. And went through a time period into slavery, got to the Civil War, the slaves were free. Those slaves were legally free, but you know a lot of them actually continued living just like they had before. Some of them didn't know any different. You know, all they knew was, you know, whatever, you know, if it was on a plantation or maybe a business in town, that they were to do this particular job for their master, they didn't know anything different. A lot of them just kept staying there and doing the same thing, became employees rather than slaves. Some of them still acted like slaves. They didn't know what a free person was supposed to act like. That's a sad period in our history, but it's not limited to this nation. There's dozens of nations that have went through similar times of slavery. There's a difference in us being free in our position and our status and being free in our experience. You know, Colossians chapter 1 and verse 13 is talking about the work of Jesus Christ. And it says, giving thanks to Christ who has delivered us from the power of darkness and translated us in the kingdom of his dear Son. That's something that happened at that one point in time when we were regenerated. Now, let me give you this example. And I don't like all aspects of this example, but maybe there's something there that will help us all in our daily walk with the Lord. Imagine, if you will, a large pasture. Large, large pasture. And right down the middle of it, here's a big fence. A fence that in your own power, in the power of any other man, you can't be crossed. On this side of the fence over here on the left, that pasture is controlled and dominated by Satan. Pasture on the right is being controlled and dominated by God the Father. All right? So you got these people in these two pastures. Do you realize that the devil cannot come in to God's pasture? He can't come in there. He can't bother any of God's sheep unless God lets him cross that fence or lets him pull somebody. But do you realize God has the power to go over into Satan's pasture and pull one of those out and just put them over in his kingdom? That's what he's done in regeneration. He looked out in those people, and God pulled it in his time. I don't know why. I don't know why he took me out of it, but he did, and put me into his pasture. So Satan, and you can go over to 1 John chapter 5 and verse 18, and it says there's a place where Satan cannot touch us. Now, wouldn't you like to be in a place where Satan cannot touch us? I mean, I know we're going to be that way in heaven, but wouldn't you like to be in a place here in this world where Satan cannot touch us? So here we are. God has taken us out of Satan's pasture. And again, I don't like all aspects of this illustration, but just bear with me. God taking somebody out of Satan's pasture and puts it in his pasture. But Satan's still on the other side of the fence, and he's looking through that fence at us. And says, I know you're over there, but it'd be a lot more fun if you'd go out and do this one particular thing. Or you wouldn't go do this particular thing. And he's talking to us. And so he's getting us to do what he wants us to do, even though we're in God's pasture. Now, we're in God's pasture. We're keeping God's law. We have a desire to do that. We're not habitually committing sins anymore. But Satan keeps talking to us. And he keeps convincing us that we need to do the things that he wants us to do. And we give in a lot of times, don't we, to all of that. And then we learn better and we start trying to do good, and then Satan talks to us again. What's the answer to that problem? If that illustration was a good illustration, what's the problem with, what would be the answer for us if Satan kept talking to us through that fence? What would be the answer, the smart thing to do? He'd get a long way away from the fence, wouldn't it? Or Satan, you wouldn't hear Satan anymore. You know what James 4 and 7 says? Resist the devil, he will flee from you. We need to get a long way from that fence. Now here's the point I'm trying to make. What Paul was teaching here in Romans chapter 6 and verse 2, that because we are born again, we don't continue in a habit of sin. We don't continue there. We're not in Satan's pasture anymore. We're not continuing in a habit of sin. But we still stumble and fall from time to time because we listen to Satan from time to time. Paul is saying, you're not a habitual sinner anymore. You know you have now a nature in yourself to walk in a righteous and holy manner. And you need to continue in that way. And further on, he's going to teach us that yes, if you are one of God's children, if you are one of those born again children of God, we've left the desires. Have you ever heard that term, and you're going to see it down here that later on in chapter 6, that we're dead to sin? You know, I used to get real confused about preachers saying, you know, we're dead to sin. You know, we're dead. And what that meant was that we're dead to all the joys of sin. And I understand a little bit about that. There's a lot of things in sin that I don't enjoy. You know, they may have a little bit of temporary pleasure, but when you know you're not doing what God wants you to do, you don't enjoy it, do you? We go through that. We're dead to the joys of sin. When it says dead to sin, that means to the dead, to the joys of sin. You and I have been changed. Thank God for that. But that doesn't mean we're perfect yet. We've still got a ways to go. Now, you remember that illustration I just used about being in this pasture? Here's God's side, and here's Satan's side. You know, on Satan's side, it's all of those horrible things. You know, all all the sins that you can imagine. I mean, I'm not going to mention any of them. Don't want to depress you. But over here on God's side, what happened to somebody that's over here in God's pasture? You know, if God plants somebody in his pasture, what's going to happen? They're going to bring forth some fruit. Galatians chapter 5, verse 22, 23 tells you about some of that fruit. Love, joy, peace, long-suffering, goodness, gentleness, meekness, faith, all of those. I think there's 9 of them there. There's something else that God's going to give you when he takes you out of Satan's domain and Satan's reign, the reign of sin, and puts you in the reign of grace. There's something else that's going to happen to you. You're going to receive the power of God. You say, what do you mean the power of God? Have you ever seen somebody that stands up against evil, whether it's a threat of evil in a physical sense or in a spiritual sense, and they seem to have no fear? They're willing to give their life for what is right. You know, it's been said that the most dangerous person in the world is a person that knows he's in the right and he just keeps on going and won't quit. Where do you get that kind of boldness? From God. I hope that I have a little bit of that boldness, because if I'm going in God's way, I know I'm in the right way. And I'm going to keep going in the way of the truth and the way that we should be walking in. That's one of the benefits of being over there in God's pasture. You have his strength and his power. Now, oftentimes we don't see his strength and his power until we see our weakness and see that it takes God's strength to get us through the problems in this life. But there's something else that's even more important, that's even greater than having strength here in this world. If you're one of God's children, you're in that great pasture. There's something better at the end of that pasture. You know what that is? That's heaven in immortal glory. We, as God's children, strive to live in a holy and righteous way here. That's our new nature. And even though we fail, we press on, because we know what awaits us, don't we? Even though there's trials and troubles and discouragements in this world, I keep on with joy in my heart. Not always happy, but I have joy. I keep on with joy in my heart, walking in the way that I know I ought to go, because I know that whatever valleys I pass through, whatever trials I go through, whatever problems may come up in this life, whatever disappointment that we may experience in our lives, at the end of our time here on earth, the Lord awaits us in heaven. Isn't that a joyful thought? Isn't that a great benefit of being one of God's people? I'm thankful for that heavenly hope, and I'm thankful for what God has done for me right here in this world today, showing us the right way to go. May you be encouraged by our God, who's taken us out of Satan's pasture and put us in his. May God be with you.